I'm Stephen Hundley, and this is the award-winning podcast, Leading Improvements in Higher Education, a service of the Assessment Institute in Indianapolis. Our sponsor for this season is the Center for Assessment and Research Studies at James Madison University. In this episode, we have a conversation on the theme of equity-centered collaboration in assessment and improvement. Our guests are Bethany Miller and Ellen Peters. Bethany is Director of Institutional Research and Assessment at McAllister College, and Ellen is Associate Provost for Institutional Research, Planning, and Student Success at the University of Puget Sound. I know you will enjoy the insights shared by Bethany and Ellen during this episode of Leading Improvements in Higher Education. On today's episode, we're going to be spending time talking about the theme of collaboration in the context of assessment and improvement. And I'm delighted we have Bethany and Ellen with us today. Bethany, Ellen, welcome to the program.
Hi, Stephen. Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, the pleasure is mine. And as longtime listeners know, we always begin our podcast episodes by asking guests to share a little bit about their background. So we'd like to ask both of you to do just that. So please briefly tell us about yourselves, including your professional pathway and what you do in your current role. For this question, we'll start with Bethany, then continue to Ellen. Bethany.
Thanks. So I am currently Director of Institutional Research and Assessment at McAllister College in St. Paul, Minnesota. And I have been in IR for over a decade. That seems hard to believe. But most of my work really includes working with our institutional partners, campus-wide faculty, staff, and students to really look at how well we are meeting the promises that we make to our students through our educational outcomes, our mission and values, and whether or not we're helping students to be successful in the ways that they define for themselves.
Bethany, thank you. And now to Ellen.
Thank you. So I serve as the Associate Provost for Institutional Research, Planning, and Student Success at the University of Puget Sound. In that role, I have not only done the more traditional institutional research work of collecting, analyzing, and reporting data, but helping us think about the context in which we're using that data on campus and how we are using it to ensure that our students are indeed leaving with all of the benefits that we hope they gain from our education. My pathway into the role, I think, is in some ways unusual. I wanted to be a dean of students. I spent time in admission, in financial aid, in enrollment, and in academic advising, and ultimately found that if I wanted to be able to provide evidence of the benefit of student affairs or academic advising, we were going to need some data to back that up. And so that's how I kind of ended up in this role.
Ellen, thank you for sharing your background and pathway. We are going to be spending a lot of our time today talking about the theme of collaboration in the context of assessment and improvement. And you both provided the keynote address in the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion track at the 2023 Assessment Institute in Indianapolis, which was held in late October 2023. Your keynote was entitled, "You Are More Powerful Than You Know: Equity-Centered Collaboration in an Assessment Context." So to kick us off, I'd like to ask you to provide a brief summary or overview of the main points you made in that keynote before we dive maybe a bit deeper into our collaboration theme. Ellen, we'll start with you and continue to Bethany. Ellen.
Thanks, Stephen. So we started as true academics by defining collaboration assessment and equity-centered assessment. And then we spoke about how each of us involved in the work of assessment can engage in equity-centered work using collaboration with some specific examples. And one of the things we really wanted folks to take away was that we all have more power than we know in the decisions that we make, in the information that we share, and in how we frame that work and who we interact with in order to advance the work of assessment at our institutions. And with that, I'll turn it over to Bethany.
All right, Bethany, continue on and build on what Ellen has been sharing with us.
Great. And so I think the key point of one of the key points of our talk was really about how you can do this in a collaborative way. We recognize that oftentimes assessment, you know, gets a wrap. People feel away when you talk about assessment. And so we really spent time talking about how it's necessary to take care of relationships, build those relationships, prune them as necessary to build shared understanding and buy-in and bring people along in the process. As Ellen said, we started out with, you know, what does assessment mean? And from the Latin, it means to sit beside. And so we talked about what does it mean to sit beside people and engage in this work. And to really highlight this theme, we sort of started and ended with the analogy of a bonsai tree and how bonsai trees can grow for centuries, but that they require care and pruning, but not just care and pruning, but also attention to the environment, where they're sitting, how much water, how much air, moves light, all of those things. And we said that in the same way, true equity-centered collaborative assessment requires also that attention.
Bethany, thank you for sharing that imagery with us. And let's just stay with you now for the next question. And that centers on unpacking and maybe defining a bit what we mean by collaboration. So how would you define collaboration and why is this so important to our work? Bethany.
So when Ellen and I started this work and really thinking about it, what we discovered is that people often use the word collaboration, but they didn't necessarily mean collaboration. They meant cooperation. And so we have a really great sort of continuum that we use that sort of guides us along the themes of, you know, networking, building shared understanding together, and then ultimately collaboration, where the work is tied together and everybody's sort of success and or failure of the project, of the assessment, is dedicated to each other. So not only are we sharing resources, but we're learning together and moving a project from beginning to completion together. And that's really important when we think about assessment, because when we think about learning, learning doesn't happen in a vacuum. There are a lot of inputs that go into it. And so when we're trying to think about how we assess learning, how we talk about whether or not students are learning the things that we think that they're learning or that we say they should be learning, then we have to think about how do we gather as much information as possible. And it's really hard to do that in a vacuum or with one or two people or with a singular office. So having the variety of perspectives is really important for having that shared understanding and building that sort of shared sense of success and failure together.
Bethany, thank you. You've been describing what collaboration is, including things being sort of tied up together and there being an integration with each other in this work. And Ellen, Bethany's been alluding to this, but let me ask you, how does assessment benefit from collaboration? And what are some of the ingredients, if you will, to promote collaborative cultures? Ellen.
Yeah, I think Bethany alluded to this, but assessment is really a communal activity, right? It actually, just like collaboration, assessment is not something that you can sit in an office and do in a vacuum. It is a community activity. And we are always using assessment to understand how we're impacting people, right? So if we're going to do that, we have to really have an understanding of the many points of view of the players, not only the people who are the stakeholders in the assessment, but also the people who are going to be assessed, right? So we need all of those points of view in the room together, and they all need to be valued in that work. Everybody who's sitting at that table needs to know what they're bringing, why they're bringing it, why it matters to the work that we're trying to do. And I think that describes both assessment and collaboration. And it's why Bethany and I are kind of so passionate about the intermingling of these two things. One of the things that collaboration, that good collaboration requires, is it requires us to slow down a little bit, because we do have to spend the time to articulate what the value is that everyone is bringing to the table. And that can sometimes be a challenge. And so you need to actually spend the time to get through all of that so that you can get to whatever your end result is. Also, if we think about assessment as being about seeking understanding, again, we have to collaborate. We have to listen to one another. As Bethany said a little earlier, sometimes we misunderstand cooperating or coordinating as collaboration. And those are one-way streets. Collaboration is truly a two-way street where you actually can't get the outcome you need without having all of those voices in the room.
Ellen, thank you. I'm paraphrasing you here. You mentioned that assessment is a communal activity requiring us to exercise understanding of multiple viewpoints of stakeholders. Let's turn our attention toward how equity intersects with collaboration. First, what is meant by the term equity in the context of collaboration? In what ways does being equity-centered influence how we collaborate with each other? For these questions, we turn to Bethany.
So I think one of the ways that we have to think about equity and how we define it is really parsing out what we mean, and what people hear. I think that equity is one of the many terms, I'm sure if we sat down to think about it, that has become sort of a single story in higher education, meaning that when we think about equity and when we do the work of equity, most times people say equity, or they'll say diversity, equity, inclusion, but what people hear is race or ethnicity. And what Ellen and I really want to sort of encourage people to do is take a really expansive view of equity, and it really should be equities, because there are a myriad of inequities that show up on our campus. And so what we mean is not necessarily the same thing for every person, which would be equality, but really true equity, where people are able to express their needs, manifest, and then see them manifest or show up in the ways that are going to help them be successful in this particular context. And equity center is really important to collaboration, because as Ellen said, collaboration is a community sport, and our communities are varied, and we have a lot of different experiences. We have a lot of different perspectives. We have a lot of different levels of knowledge about lots of different things, and having a variety of voices and perspectives at the table only make those conversations, the choices we make, the decisions we make, the way we approach our work better, as has been shown by a myriad of research studies and quoted in places like the Harvard Business Review. And so when we thought about how to put these two pieces together, the choosing of equity-centered was a really intentional choice for us, because it's the idea that equity is baked into the way that we think about and approach the work. It's not something that we think about afterwards. We're thinking about whose voice is at the table, whose voice is not at the table. Do people feel like they have the opportunity to contribute, bringing sort of their full selves to the work, and not just their positional power? And understanding that positional power is not the same as influential or cultural power. And what does that mean for how we're able to not only make decisions, but also move those decisions to action.
Bethany is describing the importance of equity-centered collaboration, and she reminds us that, among other things, this is salient for our work in terms of what we say, what we mean, and what people hear. I'd like to ask each of you how you became interested in the role of collaboration in your work. What are some, say, specific examples of how you have used an equity-centered collaborative frame in the work that you do? We'll start with Ellen and continue to Bethany. Ellen.
Always been a collaborator. I think it's, for me, actually started, I was a theater major in college. And I think theater provided this foundation for me of the importance of collaboration, where every single person involved in the project, whether they were on or off stage, was necessary. They knew that they were necessary. They knew their value. And everybody was really aware of what they were bringing to the table. And so I have really brought that into my work in institutional research and in assessment here in higher education. And I think the most salient example I can bring of recent work is I chaired a student success task force here on campus, and I purposefully included in it a really, it was a small group, but it had a wide variety of representation. And typically when we think of student success, it's, you know, the director of financial aid, the director of advising, somebody from student affairs and some faculty, and that's pretty much the group. And I really expanded it to include, we had a librarian in the group. We had a counselor from our counseling office in the group. We had some faculty. We had a coach in our group. And I made sure we included folks who'd been at the institution for 30 years and folks who'd been at the institution for less than a year. We had, in a group of nine, we had five people of color in the group. We had folks who had been graduates of the institution in the group, people with PhDs and people with bachelor's degrees. So really wide representation. And everybody, again, knew why they were in the group. They knew that there was a specific area of expertise that they were providing. And we talked about that in our very first meeting. We were very clear about why each person had been invited to be part of the group. And as a result, people feel really free to participate and to be a part of the work we were doing. At one point, one person in the group said something, made a suggestion that I felt was mission creep. And so I said, you know, I think maybe that's mission creep. We have a lot of work to do. We're a small group. Let's kind of put a pin in that. And they were supported by another person in that group who said, actually, I think they have a really good point. And one other person also piped up and said, I think that is a good point. So I went back and rethought it, and we ultimately decided to include what this person had originally brought up. I'll just note, I am a white person. All three of the people who brought that issue up were people of color. Had I not composed the group the way that, or had we not composed the group the way that we did, that, and had we had one person of color, that person may not have been supported by others. Had we not taken a collaborative approach to that work, people may not have felt free to voice their ideas to the group, and others may not have felt comfortable to support that. But because everybody knew how valuable they were, because we were taking this collaborative approach to this work of assessment and student success, we were able to actually move that idea forward, and it actually became part of our ultimate recommendations. So I think it's, for me, it really underscored yet again how important equity-centered collaboration is in our work with assessment and our work with student success.
Ellen, thank you for sharing how, in your example, you're intentionally including perspectives and valuing those perspectives in the work of collaboration. Bethany, likewise to you, some of your experiences.
Thanks. So I think one of the things in terms of how I became interested in the realm of collaboration, I think I've always tried to take a collaborative approach to work as just a part of my sort of personality and the ways that I work. But I had not been explicit in vocalizing that to others, that this was the approach that we were taking to the work. I just sort of hoped people would see it. And so I think giving space and voice to saying, this is a collaborative effort, here's what collaboration means and looks like from my perspective, and what it means for how we move the work forward, was a really important piece for me. And so one of the ways that I'll think about that we did this was a much more sort of campus-wide sort of collaborative effort. We had decided to do a campus climate study. And so I sat down with my team that is composed of lots of people with different identities. And we thought about, okay, who are the campus partners that we can bring in and help us as we sort of shape this project? And so we started out with the senior leadership team, which is a diverse group, and then a diverse group of the faculty advisory council and the staff advisory council to help us not only think about and be partners in the work, but also to help us design supplemental questions for the survey. And during this process, we were hiring a VP of institutional equity. And so then bringing that person into the conversation, learning about their approaches to the work, the vision that they had for building out the Division of Institutional Equity on our campus, and what that meant, was really key to helping the Office of Institutional Research and Assessment think about not only the data that we had, but how we were going to shape that data to bring it back to the campus community. And one of the things that we did was we decided as a team that we were going to take a little bit of a non-traditional approach and analyze the data and bring it, but not with recommendations or here's what this means, but as a series of sort of vignettes. So telling people very clearly that there's not a single story, that these are a series of stories because the data represent people's lived experiences on our campus, and that meaning making happens in dialogue. And so across the semester, a series of listening sessions, conversations, dialogues co-hosted with faculty and staff, advisory groups to bring people together. And in that process, what we also did was every time we got questions or feedback, we came back to the data, back to our presentation, and sort of iterated it, right? So that people were seeing that if they came to the conversation more than once, that the meaning making was happening and that the conversations were starting to change, and we were making those conversations together. And then that made it that much easier to say, okay, here's what we heard and decided as a community, and this is what this means for us moving this into action. And so for me, it was a very sort of top-down and grassroots approach to thinking about how we use data to like make meaning and be collaborative in the community, so that we were able to get more people invested in the process and feeling like they knew that their ideas were heard.
Bethany, thank you for sharing your examples in which you describe for us moving from the implicit to the explicit in terms of operating in a collaborative mindset, and also taking time for making meaning making through collaboration. Bethany, let me continue with you for the next question, and it may seem a little bit counterintuitive based on all the positives we've been describing related to collaboration, but what are some of the potential downsides to collaboration? How can individuals, groups, and institutions avoid these downsides? And in other words, what are the pitfalls to avoid in collaboration? Bethany.
That's a really great question. And The question may seem counterintuitive, but my answer may also seem counterintuitive. The real truth is collaboration is not always the answer, you know? Like, collaboration is a tool that we have in our toolbox to use to help us really think about and solve problems, move our institutions and organizations forward. And sometimes collaboration is sort of like a hammer, and in some cases, a sledgehammer, right? Because people are like, oh, let's bring a group together, let's collaborate. And it gets to be too much, because real, true collaboration takes time, it takes intentionality, it takes clear communication, and it takes relationships. And so if you want to avoid one of the potential downsides or pitfalls of collaboration, is really taking the time to determine whether or not collaboration is the best fit for the work that you're trying to do at that particular point in time. And if it's not, then use something else. Maybe you just need cooperation or coordination. And really taking the time to think about what that is. I think another sort of pitfall that really happens or can doom collaboration or make it harder is really when there's poor communication. So Ellen and I have spent a lot of time like thinking about this. And so we interviewed about 50 people from all sort of levels across institutions about collaboration, what happens when it goes well, what happens when it doesn't go well. And more often than not, people reported that when collaboration did not go well, it was a process and people problem, meaning there was not clear communication. People didn't know why they were there. There was back channel communication. You know, we've all had the email threads where maybe people got left on a thread or that dropped off a thread. So establishing the communication norms, the meeting norms, how you're going to sort of bring people back together if there's mission creep or we sort of lose sight of the goal, I think can be really helpful things to avoid some of the pitfalls of collaboration, which could be poor communication, not being able to sort of drive a project to completion, or having so many things thrown into the project that you lose focus.
Bethany, thank you for sharing with us some of the potential downsides to collaboration. And in doing so, you remind us that collaboration is one tool in our toolkit. For those listeners who may be interested in pursuing equity-centered collaboration, what advice do you have for them? Where and how should they begin? And what recommendations would you offer to those working in, say, less than collaborative cultures? How can they help influence and promote collaboration? For these questions, we'll start with Ellen and continue to Bethany. Ellen.
Well, I mean, as Bethany said, developing relationships is critical to the work. And I would say develop relationships before you think you're going to need them. So, and those relationships can be developed in a lot of different ways. At some institutions, there are social gatherings, and those can sometimes be the basis for relationships so that later on, when a project comes about where collaboration is necessary, you've already got a relationship with folks. And that really helps to create a strong foundation for good collaborations across campus. I would say there are some very specific things when you actually are beginning to engage in collaboration. Have a clear goal. Know your role and know the role of all of those involved in the collaboration. And as Bethany said a few minutes ago, know when collaboration is necessary and be willing to pull the plug if it's not, right? If you're in the middle of something that is theoretically a collaboration and it actually turns out it's really a one-way street, pull the plug. And say this, we don't need to have lots of meetings on this. We need direction from one person to tell us what to do, or we need to tell others what to do. And that's the end of that story. And we've talked about this before, but inviting people to the table because of what they bring, and this can be a challenge. Sometimes people need to be at the table for more political reasons. And so you have to be really thoughtful about how can you figure out what the value is that a person is bringing to that table? And as we said before, articulating that really, really fully to the whole group and to those who are outside of the collaboration. And the other piece of advice that I would give is teach people on campus what true collaboration is. I mean, Bethany and I sometimes feel like when we present together and talk together, it's like a ping pong ball, right? Like we're saying the same things over and over and over. But it is true that people confuse cooperation, networking, coordinating with collaboration. And I've spent a lot of time on my campus trying to teach folks what the difference is so that when others engage and work together, they know whether they need collaboration or whether they need cooperation or networking or something else. So I think that is an opportunity that we sometimes overlook is being able to educate those of our colleagues about what true collaboration is. And when they have that, they can then better engage in equity-centered assessment and collaboration.
Ellen, thank you for your perspectives and the advice and recommendations you are offering. And now to Bethany.
So I'm going to pick up because I don't know that I would say anything new from what Ellen said about how people can start, but I will pick up with recommendations for those working in less than collaborative cultures. I think one of the things is collaboration is happening, whether people want to admit it or not. And if the culture seems less than collaborative, this is also a place for us to be able to stop and sort of assess why we think the culture is not collaborative. Like what in the culture, in the work is calling for people to feel like they need to pull apart as opposed to pulling together. And then find some low-hanging fruit. Where there are some natural places where collaboration really does need to happen. If you're serving your students well, if you're serving the members of your community, your organization well, I would be willing to bet that there is some good collaboration happening somewhere, whether people acknowledge it or not. And so think about low-hanging fruit where you can get in, influence collaboration, promote collaboration, or start a little network of collaboration. And one of the ways to do that is through your relationships. So, you know, bring people along and also ask, can you join if people are doing work that you're interested in, that you feel like you have something that you can really contribute to? And the other piece is that from a cultural perspective, don't just bring along the people that you like and want to work with, because when we want to do projects and those sorts of things, we tend to just sort of pick the people that we like working with. Like, I'll be like, oh, I could do this with Ellen because I like working with Ellen. But also recognizing that sometimes on campus, especially when you're trying to move the needle on institutional or student success, you also need to bring along some people who may be less enthusiastic or a little bit skeptical about the work it is that you're trying to do, and thinking about how you bring those people who ideally will become champions for the cause, or at least like say, we should probably listen to what this group is saying.
Bethany, thank you for continuing to offer good advice on how to collaborate, including doing so in maybe less than collaborative cultures. So as we look ahead, what are some future trends related to collaboration and its role in promoting assessment and improvement? What are some of the challenges we must address? And, well, and on a positive note here, what gives you hope for the future? For these questions, we'll start with Bethany and continue to Ellen. Bethany.
These are really hard questions, Stephen. One of the things that I have to say for future trends is that we aren't going to be able to escape collaboration. At this particular point, higher education is facing problems that we've perhaps not faced in this particular way before. And not only that, but we also have a little bit of a public image problem at the moment from a social and societal perspective. And so the role of collaboration, especially in assessment and continuous improvement, is going to be essential to us being able to continue to talk about the value of higher education, to be able to make the case for what we're doing, why it's important for not only just like jobs and that sort of learning of the future, but also just for like a stable society and all the sort of in what old terms would call like soft skills, but really critical thinking. What are we thinking about when we're learning? How do people learn to think continuously, learning to grow and adapt, to actually learn how to be collaborative partners and thinkers in challenging environments? Because the problems that not only higher ed are facing, but also the problems that the world is facing, whether it's social justice, climate justice, or any of the myriad of issues, aren't going to take a single approach or a single perspective. They are going to take some collaborative thinking and problem solving. And so I think that's why collaboration will continue to be not only helpful, but absolutely necessary as higher ed continues to sort of grapple not only with the demographic cliff and all the sort of issues, you know, around financing and everything that we thought we had 7 to 10 years to try and face pre-COVID, but also with the myriad of issues that we've not even perhaps thought about before as we continue to move forward. But what gives me hope for the future is that, I mean, we were just at the Assessment Institute in Indianapolis in October, and to see so many people back at that conference, back in person and engaged, and like not only engaged, like showing up to the sessions, but really like leaning in to learning and thinking together about how we're going to talk about and try and face and solve some of the challenges that we're facing, not only at our individual institutions, but as a sector. Are the things that give me hope that there are a lot of really smart people out there doing some really great thinking and working.
Well, Bethany, against the backdrop of these hard questions, you've offered us a preview of the future and what gives you hope. And likewise, we come to Ellen.
Well, Bethany, as always, is so thorough and so wise, She's talked, I think, a little bit about this work very broadly, right? And kind of the future very broadly. And I think what I'd like to talk about is within the scope of our environments and our context, how might we address some of these challenges? And I think one of the things that we need to start thinking about is how we collaborate outside of higher ed. What are ways in which we can collaborate locally with our communities, whether it's with K through 12 or whether it's with our local governments or our chambers of commerce? I think there are lots of opportunities for us to do that. And if we want to be successful in navigating some of the big challenges that Bethany's laid out, we're going to need some partners to do that. And so our institution has done some of that work, I think, really successfully with our Race and Pedagogy Institute, where we have a community partners forum, bringing in people from the community to work directly with us to build programming at the institution. And I think that is the kind of work that we're going to need to keep doing if we want to overcome some of those challenges. And it's a way in which equity-centered collaboration and assessment can help do that work. I don't know. I'm always hopeful. maybe a little cynicism would be of benefit, but I'm very hopeful. And I think because in my interactions with the folks who work in higher ed, we all really want to do a good job. Like, we're not in this to make a quick buck. We're in this because we really care about students. We really care about the future writ large, and ensuring that our students are leaving our institutions with what they need to help change the world and address some of these challenges that Bethany's laid out. And again, given what I really believe is goodwill among our faculty and staff, the opportunity to use collaboration to advance that work, I think, is ripe. So somewhat of a Pollyanna in that way, but that's who I am.
Well, Ellen is bringing to us perspectives for the future and is encouraged by the promise and potential of collaboration. As we conclude our time together, we always end each episode by asking guests to leave our listeners with a brief final thought. So I'd like to ask both of you to do just that. We'll start with Ellen and conclude with Bethany. Ellen.
Yes, as Bethany mentioned earlier, we have discovered that the word assessment actually comes from the Latin accedere, which means to sit beside. And thinking about collaboration as community work, thinking about assessment as community work, and thinking about what we value in higher education, like if assessment is tied to collaboration, and if in higher ed we value inclusion and we value equity, then equity-centered collaboration and assessment is an imperative. I don't see us getting to where we want to go without employing equity-centered collaboration in the assessment work that we do.
Ellen, thank you for your final thought. And now to Bethany.
I think if I think about the final thoughts that I would share, I encourage us to lean into this work, to do all that we can to sort of continue to shake off the negative connotations that people have around assessment, that and move it away from the sort of compliance and reporting pieces, but really focus on teaching and learning and sitting beside how we do this work together in a way that is really student-centered, thoughtful, and really dedicated to moving our institutions and our students forward in a way that provides them with agency and with joy of learning and makes us feel good about the work that we have done and will continue to do, and know that you're not doing this work alone, that there are thousands of us out here dedicated to thinking about how we can tell the story, provide the evidence of all the wonderful work that's happening on our campuses and in our institutions.
Bethany, thank you. We've been speaking with Bethany Miller and Ellen Peters on the topic of equity-centered collaboration. Both Ellen and Bethany were the keynote speakers in the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion track, the 2023 Assessment Institute in Indianapolis. I invite listeners to consult our website, assessmentinstitute.iupui.edu, for resources from the 2023 Institute and information about future assessment institutes in Indianapolis. Ellen, Bethany, thanks so much for our time together today. I have enjoyed our conversation.
Thank you so much, Stephen.
Thank you.
This has been Leading Improvements in Higher Education, the award-winning podcast service of the Assessment Institute in Indianapolis. Learn more and access other episodes at assessmentinstitute.iupui.edu. Our sponsor for this season is the Center for Assessment and Research Studies at James Madison University. Learn more at jmu.edu/assessment. Our podcast producers are Chad Beckner and Angela Bergman, with original music composed by Caleb Keith. If you know someone who might enjoy the podcast, please encourage them to give us a listen. We appreciate your help in spreading the word. I'm Stephen Hundley, inviting you to join us again for Leading Improvements in Higher Education.